Hello and welcome to Adjust Your Tracking. Sitting next to me is Joe Von Oppen.
Next to me is Eric McClanahan.
How's it going, Joe?
Pretty good. We've got two movies to discuss.
Yes, we do.
A little splinter off into other movies, but the two main movies. I feel like the first one that we're going to discuss would make a joke out of the second one, but the second one deserves like so much dead serious attention. But the first one we're going to talk about, opening right this weekend, it's been available video on demand for, yep, I believe, over a month now, is the ABCs of Death. It's an anthology, mm-hmm, to end all anthologies, because it's 26 short films, films in air quotes. but it was sort of, I guess, spearheaded by Tim, what's his name from?
Tim League of the
Drafthouse Films. Yeah. He sort of rounded up, you know, all the filmmakers that are sort of signature at Fantastic Fest and South by Southwest and stuff like that, the kind of the fest that that the Drafthouse has an involvement in.
So which is all genre movies. You know? I'm sure all of these filmmakers, if not, you know, most of them have had films show there.
For sure. So you've, mm-hmm, got, you know, the heavy hitters like Ty West, Adam Wingard, yep, Ben Wheatley, other filmmakers I can't remember. 26 of them, though.
Yeah, Nacho Vigalondo is one of them, the guy, mm-hmm, who did Time Crimes.
Xavier Gens, who, yep, did Frontiers,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and Hitman.
Yeah, which I haven't seen. And I'm going to murder his name if I even attempt it, but it's the director of a Serbian film, even has a short here.
Oh, my God. Hideous.
Yeah, yeah. Surgeon Spasovjevic. So, mm-hmm, that guy.
Yep, that guy.
And some other guys. And no, yeah, gals, I think.
No, there was some. There was some.
Oh,
gals.
Yeah, there is. There's a couple in there. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, it's nice.
But is there anything else nice to say about this movie?
No. I knew pretty early on that this was going to be an endurance test of an experience, because it goes like, you know, with credits, it goes past the 2 hour mark, which is just, yeah, insufferable for a movie like this.
Yes.
Because it's you know, there's not enough time to get invested in each segment to have some sort of like really grand dramatic payoff to carry into like the lesser pieces.
Right.
So they're just like little spurts, but these little spurts with so many of them just becomes exhausting. And, yeah, since there's no real genuine like payoff in any single one of them, except for like kind of minor, that wasn't so bad payoffs, like it is just a complete slog to sit through.
It really is. And I think you're right. It's the pacing. It's the 2 hour run limit, which just isn't necessary, but it's that in almost every case, and maybe we'll get into this more, with anthology films, there's almost always like, if you're watching a bad one, you're like, well, I'm sure something good is going to come along.
Yeah.
And almost inevitably,
sure,
you get something that's good and almost makes the, and will usually make the experience worth it, where you're like, I saw one really good short film, you know? But that never really happens in,
yeah,
this film. I kept thinking, and you had saw it before me, so I'm like, okay, you know, I knew what you thought about it, but I was like, there's got to be something I'm going to like, you know,
well,
out
see,
of this.
I was halfway through when I sent you a sort of distress text that was like, this is insufferable. And you were like, well, there's got to be some good ones. And I was halfway through. I was like, shit, I'm on like R and it's the worst. Yeah. And then, you know, because you sort of like, you know, yours was basically your text back was a challenge. Like, can you finish it? And so I did. And, you know.
And you're upset about it.
I don't know if I'm better off for it.
And I mean, I think another problem just with just the idea is like, okay, maybe on paper it sounds fun. Like, we'll just do a bunch of shorts that are all about, like, I think the idea was that they gave them a letter of an alphabet,
right,
each director, and then they could choose the word that would be associated with it. And then they had full creative control to do whatever they wanted as long as it
eventually ties into death.
A death or a murder of some sort, yeah. And man, maybe it's proof that most filmmakers need constraints. I mean, sure, there's the constraint of, I think they were all given about $5,000 to make their shorts with.
Uh-huh.
So there's that constraint. There's budgetary constraints. But, like, I don't know, just the full-on creative control thing, I don't know if that's what led to just how lazy some of these were, most of them were, and just how, just, I don't know, stupid a lot of these short films were.
Yeah, and it's just, like, because there's no kind of, like, thread that's, like, connecting them other than, like, thematically.
Yeah.
There's no connective tissue to follow through to the end. So you're just left with this, like, mishmash. And it would be better, like, you know, because we're in the internet era, it would have been better suited to be, like, an internet experience.
Yep.
Where it's, like, a sort of, like, cyber advent calendar. Can you use the word cyber anymore? Is that allowed?
Yeah, sure.
This isn't the Lawnmower Man era anymore. But you just, like, you click on one, and it's like, this is A, which I don't remember, like, I don't remember what A was. Abstinence,
yeah.
Where a guy's balls explode or something.
No, it was Apocalypse. I'm just looking
right
at it now, right.
Apocalypse.
But Abstinence, see, you just thought of a better idea just now.
Well, it's, like, along the lines of something I wouldn't want to watch.
Well, come on.
But yeah, it just didn't, it seemed like something you could, like, take in doses, D for dose, and just sort of, like, leave at will, but just to sit through it. And I know it's engineered for, we've talked about this before, but, like, the midnight movie crowd. And mm-hmm. This, to me, appeals to, like, the lesser of the midnight movie experiences that I just don't really care to have anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, like, it's pushing an envelope, like, needlessly. Because there's just a lot of, like, really gruesome and unpleasant stuff that doesn't really sensitize you to anything, like, that's meaningful. Mm-hmm. So you're just sort of, like, you're pushing an envelope to what end, you
exactly.
know? And it's just, like, I don't need to see kids get, like, raped just to, like, have that envelope pushed, you know? I don't need
right.
to see that many people. I don't need to see a fat woman skin herself, though that was an impressive segment.
That was, yes.
But it's just, like, I don't know what the purpose is of, like, just, you know, having it be extreme,
yeah.
you know? And mm-hmm. We had this problem with Mutant Girl Squad a couple years ago, the midnight movie series we were having at PIFF, rest mm-hmm. in peace. But, like, that weirdness extreme that movie was pushing, like, to what end? Because
exactly.
it just, because he has a segment.
Him and another filmmaker. There's several filmmakers that created Mutant Girl Squad.
Oh, really?
Believe.
It's
yeah.
not just one person?
And they have other films, like Machine Girl is another one. Tokyo Gore Police is another
mm-hmm.
one. They're all the same level of just hallucinatory bullshit. Just, like, just awful, you know?
Yeah.
Like, childish to a degree where it's like you can't even enjoy, you know.
Yeah.
You've seen Mutant Girl Squad, so you understand.
But, like, you don't even want to fault because it's so childish. You just want to walk out of the room.
Yeah.
Like, oh, just, I don't know who this is for, but
right.
get me away from them.
Who's it for? And it's also like, why? It makes me feel like, God, why am I wasting my time watching even this 5-minute segment where the director's name, Noburo Uguchi and Yoshihiro Nishimura, right? I think they're the two directors that worked on those other films, and they each have a short here. And Uguchi's is F for Fart.
Yep.
That is as dumb as that sounds. It's even worse when you see it in action.
Yeah.
And
even though it's like, it's, you know, short.
It's short, but
not short enough.
Yeah. It's not merciful. It still goes on way too long. And it just really, for me, it's like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, these guys are terrible filmmakers. They're like,
yeah.
you know, you've Sion Sono, the director I'm quite fond of, that did like Love Exposure and Cold Fish,
Suicide Club,
right? I think that those shorts show like how much better someone like Sion Sono is at, like, he goes for a similar sort of transgressive and just weird and pervy sort of aesthetic and, like, you know, themes in his films, but he's the better side of something like what these other directors are doing.
Yeah, it's interesting to, like, have, you know, like, the midnight movie experience. We talk about just seeing something we haven't seen before.
Right.
But in that, like, there has to be parameters, and there has to be, like, an artfulness.
Yes.
And, like, a guide. Because basically, like, most of these films are just someone I don't trust screaming in my face. Like, that's what the extreme experience ends up becoming. And it's just like, that. I don't want that. I don't want to invite that into my, like, atmosphere.
Yeah.
Have someone I don't, who hasn't earned my trust, screaming at me.
And, you know, this ABCs of Death is the kind of thing that gives midnight movies a bad name, where people can slag them off because they're like, oh, it's, you know, that's for the less discerning audiences, and they don't care. And it's like, no, you're making us look bad, because it still can be good films, you know?
And then it ends up, like, that becomes, like, this weird sort of, like, bratty badge of honor, that it's like, that's the point. We want to piss
fucking
those snobs
that
off. And it's like, nah, but, like, there's an artfulness to it. You know, that I know I've told this story before, but I remember standing outside a film festival waiting to get into the midnight screening of Enter the Void.
Right, right.
And there were two lines. There was the badge holder line, which was mostly press, and then there was the pass holder line, which I was in. And, you know, the pass holder line was mostly made up of fans. And at the front of the line, I didn't know internet trolls existed in the three-dimensional realm, but I saw
them. They do.
And they were all wearing Dario Argento t-shirts, and they were quoting Trash Humpers, which had played earlier in the festival, and they started yelling at the badge holder line, which was going in first, like, you don't know this filmmaker? There's rape in this movie! Everybody gets raped! And I was like, oh no, like, I share taste with these people. And I just didn't, like, just that sense that they just want to, like, kind of anti-socially have this, like, bullying aesthetic of envelope pushing that's so just, like, empty and dull at the end of the day.
I agree. And then it also, I mean, that's not why we like Gaspar Noé's films.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we think that there's something artful and, like, you know, transgressive, yes, but he's pushing the envelope of cinema in a lot of ways. And if all people are there for is just the pushing of the envelope of what we can accept on, you know,
just
on
having
film.
Having seen that now, like,
yeah,
I've seen that happen now. No, yeah. What else?
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, we both do want to see things we've never seen before, but it's like, come on, there's got to be a level of, I just totally agree with everything you're saying. Like, it's our defense for the midnight movies is like, they can still be good movies. There's proof that they're out there. It shouldn't be this crowdsourced thing where anybody can do it, because it's like, just think of the most fucked up thing you ever can imagine and put it on film, you know? That's boring.
Yeah, but just, like, exploring why is it fucked up? Why
is
it culturally fucked up? And why, like, why are we drawn to it and repulsed by it?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
like, that dynamic. I remember going to see, there was a stand-up comic who was in town recently showing the documentary about him that's available on demand.
What's
quick
it called?
Plug.
What's
it's called The Bitter Buddha.
Okay.
And he was doing a bit in
Who's
his stand-up.
The comedian?
Eddie Pepitone is his name.
All right.
It's actually a really good documentary.
Okay.
We're not being paid by them to plug them. But he did a bit where he was talking about if The Price is Right was guessing things like the cost of the Iraq War. And he was jumping back and forth between the excited woman trying to guess the price and a man standing up in the audience screaming that this shouldn't be happening because he's a vet returned from the war saying, I lost my mind! He's bouncing back and forth between these characters. And it was hysterical, like, from the immediacy of it, just from, like, the ferociousness of his attack. And your heart is breaking at the same time. And that's, like, the kind of dynamic experience that I would want from something that pushes boundaries. Like,
yes.
Something that's aware of why something is fucked up and why it's worth looking at and sometimes why it's worth laughing at.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And, and that we can heal through laughing at something.
Absolutely. And I feel like that point was never even considered by all 26 of these filmmakers.
Yeah.
Which is weird because we've mentioned some that we're really fond of. Ty West, Ben Wheatley, I think we just can't stop talking about that guy lately because everything he's done so far has been so great.
His was fine.
It was fine.
It just didn't really like demonstrate why we love him.
Exactly. I mean, I think, you know, the only thing I really, really enjoyed out of it is that we got to see the two leads from Kill List again, you know? It's like, that's great,
because
I like both of them, you know? And it has a sort of POV look to it that isn't anything new, but, you know, it works for what they're going for in that short.
Ty West, I'm actually very mad at.
Very disappointed with him, yeah. Like, he can do so much better than that.
Yeah.
His is one of them, because we know he's talented. He's proven with two feature films.
You're kind of holding your breath waiting for his to pop up.
Right.
And then when it does, it's like, that was yours?
Yes.
I'm mad at you.
Because that's the thing. You do at least get to see, after each short ends, you get the letter. You know, it's in order. It'll be like, A is for Apocalypse by the filmmaker. So you'll get that. And
B is for Bigfoot. C is for catheter. I don't remember.
C is for cycle. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But Ty West was M is for miscarriage. And it's like, what do you think that's about? It's that basic and stupid.
Very flatly delivered.
Oh, and it's just like, really? That was it? Like,
yeah.
I just feel like he can do better. Maybe he just pocketed the like $4,900. Maybe he spent $100 on it, pocketed the rest of the budget, you know?
It looked like it was shot on Super 8 or something. So maybe it cost $5,000 to get that processed.
Maybe. Maybe there's a couple other that we liked or what.
Okay. Dogfight, I think, was my favorite.
Yes. Which is interesting because it is not necessarily something that I think you would be, you Jovan Oppen, would want to see.
Well, it takes, very sensitive subject matter.
Yeah, yeah.
Hurting animals, but it turns it. There's
yes,
a
it
turn
does.
In it, and it's like, oh,
I was curious
right.
what you would think about this one. Okay, this
and
is
like,
cool.
And, like, it incorporated a sort of, like, oddball sensibility that, like, you feel like is sort of required of these shorts.
Right.
It had, like, the baby, like, throwing her arms in the air in the audience at the in the middle of, like, you know, watching a dog fight.
A man fighting a dog, but
it's having a fist fight with a dog.
Literally, that is what you're seeing, yeah. And it's shot with
But it's not just that. It doesn't just take that conceit and then nosedive into unpleasantness with it. Like, it sort of has a turn,
yeah.
And there's a payoff, which I feel like most of the films involved in this anthology, there's no payoff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like a sort of steady descent. And I just get the sense that there's always like a, well, that's the point. And that drives me berserk.
As you're watching this film, you can imagine the, like, fanboy that would just be like,
that's the point.
It's supposed
mouth
to be
breather.
Bad.
You're like, God, I hate you. Get out of this line.
Fuck you.
Will you internet troll come to life?
Yeah, you know, I'm really glad you brought that one up because that was, I think that's clearly, like, either the best or one of the best of this lot. And I kind of forgot about it because it's D, so it comes
early.
Yeah. And I was just inundated with shit for the rest of the movie, most of the part, and I kind of forgot about that one. That really wasn't that bad, you know?
Yeah.
And actually has some style to it where, like, they shot with super slow-mo and it's used really effectively.
Yeah,
As if it takes place in the Fight Club basement, you know, which is cool, you know?
Or it's got the playful elements from the Guy Ritchie movies featuring fist fights.
Yeah,
you
Snatch.
Know?
Yeah, yeah.
Snatch and Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah,
there's
plenty
extent.
Of fist fighting in that, yeah. Yeah, man. And then, I honestly can't really think of any others that really I took to or really liked. But here's an example, I think, if I were to cite two right now that come to mind.
That you liked?
That I didn't like, but that kind of personify everything that's wrong with these shorts.
Please.
And I'm going to start with the one, I think it's called, I don't know if it was Ingrown or Exterminate. It's the one where it has to do with spiders.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I can't remember if it was Exterminate or Ingrown. But that starts out like, for one, if anybody's afraid of spiders like I am, it's terrifying, the potential of this short film. And it also reminds me of a book. It was a picture book that I read as a kid. It was kind of like a scary story where a person had a spider laid eggs in their, like, cheek, and it burst at one point. And that, as a kid, I was already afraid of spiders, but that book and that image, like, just the sketches from that book are ingrained in my memory forever.
Yeah.
And that's a terrifying thing to think about. Now, this short film, you know, gets to that same sort of thing. It's basically a recreation of that story that I read. And I wish I remembered what that story was called, but either way.
Arachnophobia, the book.
I love Arachnophobia.
The pop-up book.
But that short, the short with the spider story, it fucks it up because it builds up for a couple minutes, and then when it gets to the sort of explosion and the terrifying part, it just ends. And it ends without any idea. Like, it's as if the filmmaker had no idea that, like, what to do with that payoff. It's like they knew how to build things up, but it was just like, and here it happens, and then it's cut to black. It just showed, like, such a lack of skill of, like, the release that's so necessary to that sort of gross suspense that's going on.
But that bleeds into the entire project,
right.
I feel like. That
right.
There's, like, there's no, with the exception of very few, there's no payoff.
Yeah.
And there's just like, well, these are all going to, like, sort of seep into each other, and then there will be a sort of collective, overall, overarching payoff. Nope.
No, not at all. And, you know, the other one that really bugged me is G is for Gravity. And if you remember, it's where a guy, it's a point of view. It's as if the camera is
he's surfing.
He's going out. Now, maybe I'm a bad person. I don't know. But I was like, ooh, this is going to be a shark attack.
Yeah.
This is, and whatever.
POV shark attack. That might be fun.
That's what I, you know, and that's what I expected.
You could get digested by the shark. And
I
want to
see what that looks like, you know?
Shit the camera out.
And I thought, hey, so maybe that's my expectations were not met when this short, but it had nothing to do with that. But also, I don't know if you remember it that well, but I couldn't tell what actually happened that short film.
And it's like, wait, Gravity? He's drowning,
yeah, what?
I think.
And I thought, gee, Great White? I'm thinking shark attack all the way, so I didn't get my expectations. But even the thing that upended my expectations, I just wish I could have known what actually happened.
Right.
And there's just other examples of that in this film, and that just is so, so upsetting. And
one that comes to mind, and I'm going to sound, we're just going to increasingly sound like grandparents, like trying to like grapple for which one's which, but the one involved, the claymation one?
Yes, Toilet.
It was Toilet.
It was
okay.
Toilet, yes.
I thought that one actually had a pretty playful sensibility that, like, you know, it did have kind of a payoff. Because there was an artfulness to it that, you know, just ended up being satisfying.
Absolutely. And you know what I liked about that one, too, is it had a grimy, like, the claymation is very lo-fi.
Yeah.
But it would have fit perfectly in Liquid Television. You remember that little
series
that happened in MTV?
Ian Flux.
Yeah, Ian Flux. All that stuff was really cool. And I remember when Toilet ended, I was like, oh, that would have been a perfect Liquid Television short. It would have fit great in that. And I think just what we're ultimately getting at is that, you know, we reviewed VHS last year, you know, and we had a lot of problems with that. But, you know, at least there was an attempt, and for the most part, there was at least an attempt to unify the shorts and create an actual film experience.
A context.
That would be worth going to the theater and seeing something as a whole. But that isn't the case in ABCs of Death, and I think you're right. It's. I think what ultimately is what would make me kind of knock it even lower on the scale of films that I've seen like lately is that it doesn't deserve to be in a theater. This should be a YouTube channel for Drafthouse films.
Yeah.
It should not, and because they've got a little bit of, you know, pull and cachet in the genre world right now, I think that's why this is able to show at places like the Hollywood Theater like it is this weekend.
Yeah.
And really, this is, I just think its place is online, and really, you could probably find 26 better short films out there.
Yeah.
Quite easily, if you just looked, you know, online, that would be more interesting. Ben Wheatley has better short films online that you can find out there. You know, ABCs of Death.
I for these anthologies, I would say like brevity. Like even though each individual film is short enough, like brevity and the overall.
Yes.
Because I feel like Creepshow is even too long. Like that movie, too long. Creepshow 2 is 90 minutes, and it's like better for it. They may not be better short films within it, but
they learn their lesson.
Yeah. A movie I will recommend as like a quick off the top laptop cinema-ish recommendation, which is streaming on Netflix, watch instant, is Tales from the Hood.
Nice.
Which is, you know, like, it gives you the context, it gives you the sort of, like, connecting tissue storyline, and it actually wraps one of the stories around in the overall story. Has an amazing performance by Clarence Williams III, directed by Rusty Cundiff, who did a lot of the Chappelle shows.
Right, that's right.
And so, like, he, to me, is, like, what I was trying to describe with the Eddie Pepitone bit. Like, he, like, in his work on the Chappelle Show and with this movie, is able to give you something sensationalist, exciting, but to confront something, like, you know, social that's fucked up.
Yep, yep.
And I just think it's, like, it's a really great, loaded, and fun movie.
Nice. I don't think it's on, it's streaming anymore on Netflix, but an anthology film that I've really liked of late, And it was about 6 years ago, I think, when it came out. But it was Tokyo. Have you ever heard of this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, the benefit is that they took three really good filmmakers to make these three short films in it. And it's Michel Gondry, Bong Joon-ho, and Leo Carra, who had Holy Motors last year. And actually, for those that, you know, for the few of you out there that actually have seen Holy Motors, there's a character that is the subject of the short film. I've mentioned it before when we talked about Holy Motors, but it's the sort of like crazy sewer-dwelling monster character that exists in Holy Motors, but he also is the subject of the short film, Carra's short film in Tokyo. But Bong Joon-ho has a really great segment that you know, gets into all the things that, like, just the weird sort of technology and the culture in South Korea and a lot of Asian cultures and just kind of everywhere is what technology is doing to make people more lonely and they're actually more comfortable with just like being by themselves. And that short film and that really like gets into that, but also is just beautifully made. And Michel Gondry is some of the best stuff I've seen him do since, it's actually the best thing I've seen since Eternal Sunshine for him. And I really feel like he's a filmmaker that I loved after I saw Eternal Sunshine. And he's really kind of fallen like for me. Like I don't really like anything else he's done.
Yeah.
Except his short in Tokyo. It's really, really good. So Tokyo is well worth tracking down as far as an anthology film.
I don't know if the Dario Argento t-shirt wearing internet trolls at the front of the midnight movie line would like it.
I don't know. Yeah, it might be a little too arty for them. I don't know. But something I think that they would like is a short film that just recently came online. It played at Sundance this year, and it's called The Apocalypse.
Yes.
Have you watched this?
I did, yeah.
Isn't it great?
It was part of the sort of like slew of so I wanted to say Sunset, Sundance movies that the shorts that they released on a channel, like a Sundance channel. And yeah, it's got Martin Starr, Freaks and Geeks fame.
And Party Down.
Yes. And you're right.
He's great.
And, I guess to give anything away would be to spoil it.
Yeah.
It's a pretty jolting experience watching that.
And it's interesting. It's called The Apocalypse. The first short film in ABC's of Death is called Apocalypse. I would say watch this one instead. It's 5.5 minutes long. It's on YouTube. Watch it. It's such an inventive, like, the way they did the effects in the film are incredible. There's some interviews you can find, at least one I read on IndieWire with the director of The Apocalypse, and he talks about how they did it, and it's so not what you think. It's not all just relying on CGI. It was really cleverly done, and it's funny. It's clever. It's got a great payoff at the end. It's an incredible little short film.
So yeah,
I'd say go that route. Either of the recommendations we've just given, you'll be much better off.
Yeah, spare yourself an hour and 55 minutes of ABCs of Death and just watch The Apocalypse.
That's right.
Nothing ever happens in West Memphis, Arkansas.
We've had three children missing since last night.
Three young boys murdered in cold blood.
It appeared that they had been sexually mutilated.
Is it your opinion that these crimes were motivated by occult beliefs?
Yes.
Arrested at 2:44 p.m., charged with three counts of capital murder.
Life imprisonment without parole. Death by lethal injection.
A case with a confession would be easier as opposed to one without direct evidence.
A statement was put in his mouth by the police.
They beat up all three of them.
Then they tied him.
And they tied him up.
Here's the state of Arkansas refusing to let the truth shine on this case.
Did Damien invite you to some meeting?
Satanic meeting.
I was just a big liar. And I really was.
You're dealing with a horrendous crime. It warps their judgment.
There's careers at stake.
The option to reopen the case was presented to him, and he went, no, we found them guilty. We're done.
We don't believe the people of Arkansas are going to be satisfied until there is a new trial.
Not only is the state getting away with it, but the person who killed those three kids is still out there walking on the street.
It's So the movie I referenced earlier on in the podcast that ABCs of Death may make a joke about, child murders potentially,
right,
is the new documentary opening in town this Friday, West of Memphis.
West of Memphis,
which,
yes,
after all of the Paradise Lost series, covers the Memphis Three, the three at the time juveniles who were convicted of three child murders in Arkansas.
Yep.
And it's I had seen the first Paradise Lost,
yep,
and was familiar enough with the story, and was kind of like, is this documentary really necessary? And like, after sitting through it, I feel like it absolutely is, because,
yes,
it gives a comprehensive, like, view of the entire story, like the scope of it, and just like everybody that's involved,
yeah,
to an insane extent. And I mean, how much it mirrors, you know, a documentary we, like, you know, talked about a couple months ago, Central Park 5.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
4 years after the Central Park 5, we got the West Memphis 3.
Yep.
And, like, you know, it was just like, it was a story. This was less racial profiling, more behavioral profiling,
yep,
of three kids who grew up in, you know, Arkansas, poor kids, liked, you know, heavy metal, and, you know, were into some, like, darker things, and they were sort of, like, rounded up, and it was a story that was sellable to the public, that there were these kids, and it was, like, this sinister kind of, like, plot that they were Satanists.
Yep.
And that they were responsible for this, like, horrific act. And,
yep,
I think that, like, that's really scary, that a narrative can be created that the public wants to sort of, like, digest. Like,
yeah,
they want this story. They want this to be the case, as opposed to a member of their community who's responsible for it, because that's harder to take in.
Exactly, exactly. And I think it just, you're right, this film packs in a lot of stuff. It's so many great movies wrapped into one, you,
yeah,
know? And all of them, I think, are successfully bridged from one to the other. But definitely one thing it gets into is that it's like people, and Central Park 5 does this too, is people don't want, for some reason, people as a pack, you know, as a group, do not like the gray, you know,
right,
they want things to be black and white because it's just so much more digestible, and then you can go about your day and be done,
yeah,
you know. Oh, well, those assholes are Satanists and they killed some kids. Of course they did it. And it's,
yeah,
like, it's much easier to accept. And thankfully, with the film West of Memphis, is that there were people that said, no, that, like, this can't be right. Like, it, and,
yeah,
they dug and, like, investigated and worked their asses off for, you know, 15, I think, plus years, you,
yeah,
know?
And the people that committed to it, like celebrities, and,
right,
one of the producers of the film, Peter Jackson, like,
yep,
he wasn't just supportive of the effort to sort of investigate and free the kids. He was an active participant.
Him and his wife were, like, funding it, and then,
yeah,
they led the investigation. They're like, here's who
we need to look at these things. And it's like, how are you doing this when you're making fucking Lord of the Rings movies?
I honestly, that's the thing I would love to know. And I also think it shows, you know, he's like the new Steven Spielberg, the new George Lucas, but yet,
yeah,
he seems like a very modest guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not want his involvement known until, like, the film was done and, like, that stuff, and, like, they were out of prison. So for, like, more than 6 or 7 years, you know, him and Peter Jackson and his wife were leading this. And,
yeah,
and it's amazing, because that's what I want to know. Like, did they finish Lord of the Rings and they had some time on their hands,
right,
clearly had some money, and they're like, what do we do, you know? Like, and they, to whatever the circumstances was that got them involved, you know, Jackson in the film says, you know, I have an aversion to bullying, he says.
Yeah.
And it, I just love that line that he says that, and that it bothers him so much that he realized he could do something positive with it.
Yeah.
But there was never any guarantee, and it's clearly never was a, I'm a celebrity that wants to hitch, you know, my name to this thing. It's,
right,
like, he just, yeah, like you said, they were invested in it and did so much of the work that,
yeah,
it, I think I said to you last night, it was like, it, I have a whole new appreciation for Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done nothing for me with his films post Lord of the Rings trilogy, but, I don't know, I just like the guy as a person so much more now.
I mean, yeah, so, I mean, so many of the people that got involved, the Eddie Vedders,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
Henry Rollins, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
they, like, long, like, over a decade of being involved. Like, Eddie Vedder at one point, in one of his more lucid moments, says, he's like, I got involved in this in the late, you know, when I was in my 20s, and,
yeah,
now I'm 40-something.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, and that's Eddie Vedder, who's been a rock star. What about the fucking three people that have been, that were in jail,
yeah,
you know, because of this? And, you know, maybe it's worth getting into the case a little bit here to explain, and maybe dive in a little bit more as to, like, to explain the Paradise Lost documentaries. There's three of them, and it follows this case as well.
Right.
First one was in the mid-90s, I think, like, right after they were found guilty. And it seemed, it did seem really odd that there would be, you know, there's all three films already covering this, but it really does seem that the director, Amy Berg, really just found, this is the big film about this case,
yeah.
I think there's always going to be more stories to tell for this, you know, just this whole crazy thing, and it lasted for so long, but she really finds a way to get intellectually involved, emotionally involved in it, which is sometimes hard for documentaries like this that are sort of, you know, disseminating a lot of information. She finds a hook, you know, and it has a tie as well to, was it Into the Abyss, the Herzog documentary we watched last year?
Yeah.
Where it focuses on Damien Echols is the oldest of the West Memphis Three that was found guilty, and he falls in love while in prison. A woman found him and, like, became... I think they got married in prison, and that's kind of the emotional hook of this film. And I think that was a really smart move that could have been manipulative and not necessary.
Well, he's the only one that that you really sort of are kind of with and following through interviews throughout the film. And, like, I wondered about that, but you do eventually get the perspective of the other two of the Memphis Three.
Yeah.
That they pop up towards the end sort of, like, in a great way.
Yes.
You know, and, like... just the miracle that these people were able to grow in a situation that's sort of engineered to crush people. And this, like, it was very similar in that way to Central Park 5, that these people were, had a perspective, had, like, a grace and a forgiveness of, like, a world that was just, like, I mean, just imagine the nightmare that that would be. As a kid, you're just, like, you're ushered through life as an, like, you know, as a child by adults, and then just to get pressured into this nightmarish situation where you're essentially confessing to a crime you didn't commit.
It's crazy.
Or just, like, yeah, you're treated, you know, like adults in this horrific system.
Yeah, that's another very close similarity to Central Park 5 is one of the West Memphis Three was he's borderline mentally handicapped.
Yeah.
And they used him to basically they just wrangled a confession out of this guy who didn't really know what the hell was going on. But that is only really the beginning of all the, like, crazy injustices and just, like, things that abuse of justice, you know, and creating, like, the way the prosecution for this case, like, created a narrative that worked for them to sell these three as being the guilty parties
to the public.
And it's,
and just that sense of injustice, like, with both films, I feel like is so confounding. It's just like, what is the point of sending the, like, knowingly sending the wrong people to jail? Because it's a way that you show the strength of the justice system, you show the strength of the police force. It's a way to, because they just want to win and they just want to be fortified. And that's why, like, getting the case a retrial was such an uphill battle, because, like, it shows the sort of, like, weakness, the, like, chinks in the armor of the system.
Yeah, and the political game that they're ultimately playing, you know, judges and prosecutors and all them. And it really, it's a film that will anger you but also leaves you, like, with so much, I don't know, the story just worked out perfectly. And,
yeah.
I mean, I think I heard in an interview, a really good interview, actually, if anybody listens to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell, he interviews Damien Echols, his wife, and the director, Amy Berg. And it's great because she talks about how they had, like, 800 hours of footage, and there's so many different avenues she could have went down. But I really feel like every question that would pop up in my mind, like, why aren't we seeing much of the other two, you know, of the West Memphis Three? She answered it eventually. And it was all, there was all a purpose and a reason for it. The way she structures the film, and I just think it shows that she's a really great documentary filmmaker.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I always kind of, like, that comes into question whenever I'm watching a really strong documentary, is, like, is this subject matter just so riveting? And it's like, I wouldn't be thinking that if the movie wasn't put together well.
Yes.
But it seems like, oh, the story is just, like, it's so engrossing, this probably just sells itself. But there is, like, a real like eloquence to the film,
yeah,
and how it's put together and how it is sort of built and arced and how they introduce people into it,
yeah,
and how they reveal like certain just like parts of the story like at the appropriate time to really like pull you in.
Yeah, I mean, it really shows, I think editing is such a big thing in documentary filmmaking, and it shows that, yeah, you know, if you have a great, compelling, true story and the story takes turns that you couldn't have expected, it's like, that's great, but it still depends how you're going to transmit that to the audience. How are you going to tell right. that story? And anytime you make an edit, that's a choice that that filmmaker is making. And I really just think, I mean, there's so many things to really love about this film as a filmmaking, you know, just at the filmmaking itself and just the subject matter. And I really think that this film never gets too political either. Mm-hmm. The filmmaker never makes her opinions blatant. She kind of just lets people say what they want to say on camera. And it shows that, like, maybe it's time to start questioning whether we should be having the death penalty in this country, you know? It's
yeah.
like, but it never gets, there's never a moment where someone declares that on the film, you know? It's
no.
like, it's just like, it's what I was taken away from it. And I've never really, I don't know, it's not that I didn't care about whether we had the death penalty or not before, but it really made me consider, like, why do we have this, you know? If it could ever be proven that one person was killed wrongly for the death right. penalty, isn't that enough to be like, maybe this is not the right thing? And I don't think it's preventing anything, bad things from happening, you know?
Yeah.
As a deterrent, I don't really think it works, you know? So this film just got me thinking about all that, but also 2.5 hours just flew by as a documentary. It's just really impressive in that way.
Yeah, for, you know, just anything about kid murders.
Sign me up.
But yeah, I mean, you bring up the point that it gets you thinking about things, and it gets you thinking about different threads in a way that it's not hammering in a completely kind exactly. of like just really blunt fashion.
Yes.
Like, it got me thinking about selling like narratives to the public and mm-hmm. how that's very seductive for people to just like buy into, the way it was with both documentaries we've been talking about, Central Park 5 and West of Memphis, that they're like, people really want to buy a story. And how often that happens, not just with murder cases or just with assault cases, but with like
right.
wars, with everything, that we just like, we need something sold to us in a story form that's like digestible, and how we need to be pretty wary of that.
Yeah, I mean, is it just that we're just so inundated with everything and just day-to-day living for most people? It's like, it's enough. And people want to care about things, but it can be mistreated. So
we need things to be like put in boxes,
yeah.
so we don't have to take on the totality of everything all at once.
I think we need to start taking on the totality, people. Like, come on, like, we just need to accept that not all things are that you know, black and white and that clear and
yeah.
simple.
And I mean, there is, in the same way that, to bring up another documentary, The Imposter, there is like a sense that something. I mean, the bigger issue that even Damien Echols, as he's sitting awaiting potentially, you know, being put to death,
yeah.
he says, I want to know, like, there's somebody out there that's responsible for this, and that's not what anyone's talking about.
Yeah.
If we're wrongfully convicted, there's a killer that's still out there.
Just hanging out, yeah.
And that's something that's left, unfortunately, unresolved.
Yep.
You know, because, like, that's just the nature of, like, you know, they sort of paint a portrait of somebody who most likely is responsible.
Seems pretty clear, and the film does it. That's the almost the most slippery slope the film goes down, but handles it perfectly. I think it's
yeah,
and most of it is because of these first person interviews they have with the person that the film makes it very clear as to, like, I, you know, we can all probably agree after seeing this film that it was probably this guy, you know.
Yeah,
but it's just handled so well. I mean, it's such great journalism, such strong filmmaking. It really got me thinking of Amy Berg's film I saw before. Have you ever seen Deliver Us from Evil?
No.
It was Oscar nominated. It from, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. It's equally like just compelling as hell, like this film, and the way she must be comforting or something, because there's a way she gets subjects to open up. In West of Memphis, there's people that kind of like say things that you wouldn't expect them to say on camera.
Right.
But even more so in Deliver Us from Evil, which is, it's a documentary about, I think it was in California, there was this priest
mm-hmm.
that was accused like 3 or 4 different times of, you know, pedophilia, like taking, like, he was brought into the homes of people in his congregation
mm-hmm.
that would invite him for dinner and stuff. And he would get time alone with their kids and just, I mean, just unspeakable, horrible things, right?
Yeah.
This guy is interviewed throughout the film, Deliver Us From Evil, and talks candidly about it. He talks about fondling a nine-month-old baby right on camera, right?
Is this an ABCs of Death sketch?
It is not, and it is more horrific than anything we saw in ABCs of Death, but yet the film handles it so, so well. I mean, it's one of those documentaries, films, whatever, that is feels like someone, after you, midway through,
you feel ruined,
and you feel like someone came up and just punched you in the gut, and you're just like, ooh. Like, there's so many times where I've, like, got the wind knocked out of me.
Yeah.
But, man, is it worth it? I mean, the film puts you through the ringer, but it's just, I really think it shows Amy Berg, like, with that film and West of Memphis, she's really a great documentary filmmaker to be on the lookout
for. What was also interesting, you know, and another point, like, she didn't hammer was that, like, she would let the interviews speak for themselves, and mm-hmm. she was able to get something candid out of people that, you know, like, just comes from trust. But there was also something very clear that she left kind of, like, up to you, that, like, there were people who, when they spoke and they had something to hide, you could tell.
Yeah, exactly.
And just by, she just if would you leave were, it alone.
Exactly. Just if you were paying attention, there was no music cue, there was no easy
or
route.
Zoom in.
Right, nothing like that. That I think that's where it really shows the difference in a quality. Like, you can see a lot of hack documentary filmmakers are just sensationalist news reporters really going for something lesser like that, you know? And it shows what a deft, thoughtful hand she has as a filmmaker to just, like, and it's the thing I think we've talked about a lot on the show, is like the trust in the audience. Just figure it out and come to whatever conclusion you want. But I mean, we've talked a lot about what we thought was great about this film. I think it's pretty clear. Like, I think this is one of the better films I've seen this year, you know?
Yeah.
It really is. And it's, you know, I got it, and before I put it on, I'm like, oh man, 2.5 hours. It was just the stupid initial response of like, 2.5 hour documentary, you know? And it just flies right by.
Yeah.
And I don't think we said, but where does this film open? Cinema
21 on Friday.
On Friday, yeah. And it's, you know, it's probably only going to play for a week, but I really think that this is the one you should be seeking out.
Yeah.
For this weekend.
Was it nominated for an Oscar?
It wasn't. I think it was nominated for a BAFTA, which is, you know, British equivalent of the Oscars.
It was up for it. Like, it was being considered.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not quite sure. I don't know if it qualified for last year, you know, for just this last Oscars, or maybe it'll qualify for next year's. It's, you know, it's in that sort of weird netherworld where, like, foreign film releases that were nominated for an Oscar last year but are just now coming out.
Right.
Who knows? My guess is that it probably was up for in contention for last year, which if it wasn't nominated.
Neither was Central Park 5.
Neither was The Imposter. I mean, those are three fantastic documentaries.
Angry.
Yeah. Well, Searching for Sugar Man 1, that was a good.
Yeah, it was good.
But, you know, it's a good movie, but, like, come on. These other three, I think, are a little more exemplary of what the documentary form can do. The stories feel a little bit bigger and important, but Searching for Sugar Man really gives you that, you know.
The crane kick moment at the end.
You do get the Karate Kid crane kick, exactly. It's very satisfying, and that film makes you feel good about the world, whereas West of Memphis gets there, you feel good about things, but yet it's more realistic of, like, you know, it's not that easy. It's not that black and white.
So. At the end of Central Park 5, when an interviewee says, maybe we're not good people, that's not a crane kick. That's a crane kick to the groin.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think we can sing the praises enough of West of Memphis. I just think it's a really fantastic documentary.
Two thumbs down for ABCs of Death. Two thumbs up for West of Memphis.
Exactly. Can we say that? We might get...
No.
Yeah, we're going to have lawyers coming for us, man. We'll just have to, you know, maybe we.
What's
can't...
beneath meh? Like,
I don't know.
Because we've got for what we like, and
For the middling.
Sub is definitely what ABCs of Death is.
A toilet flush, I don't know. But we don't want to get. You see, that's because ABCs of Death is bringing us down to their level.
Right.
I mean, as if it's a person, you know. It brought us down to their level, that film. So now we're just, we're declaring the toilet flush for that film.
So if you've got a choice to make this weekend. Please choose wisely.
Please do. I mean, we'll still respect you, you know, if you want to see the ABCs of Death, but come on, we'll lose a little bit.
Come on.
Come on, people. So we're going to wrap up episode 55 of Adjust Your Tracking.
Damn.
Yeah. We're just chugging along, man, every week. It's good. I like seeing the count. You can find the show, as always, on newsroom.nwfilm.org. Click on the podcast tab. Leave comments. Email us at adjustyourtracking@gmail.com.
Do you guys know about Twitter? Our Twitter handle is at Adjust Your Track, and you can follow us. We'll follow you back.
This last week, now that I've had some time, I was posting links to articles and things like
that.
That's great. On Twitter.
We talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a regular thing. I shouldn't guarantee anything because that Facebook page that I promised hasn't happened yet. But, you know, I got to wait till Facebook is irrelevant and not used anymore before I make us a Facebook page.
Friendster.
It'll happen. And, you know, as always, find us. The best place to find us is on iTunes. Subscribe, leave a review and a rating. Tell your friends about the show. Let's get some chatter going. And if you do that, we'll thank you. But most importantly, I got to thank Joe.
Thank you.